What's up, everybody?
Welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast, episode 159. Today we are doing an episode that I've been wanting to do for a really long time. I've definitely mentioned it on the show like at least a few times in the last year or so.
You have?
Because I found this when I was going down a little rabbit hole about chimpanzees and the crazy shit that they can do.
They are some scary motherfuckers, man.
They can be. Not all of them. There's some great chimps. I've met some great chimps.
You've met some?
Actually, no. I've never really met any chimps. But I've seen them on like National Geographic. I've seen some nice chimps.
Well, yeah. In the wild, they're right? Like fine. But yeah. When it comes to human interaction, that's when things get a little dicey.
It can. It can for sure. And they can fuck you up. Like, yeah. I mean, it's really unbelievable the strength that they can have. And
yeah, they're stronger than an adult male. Like, mm-hmm. And they have, their teeth are razor sharp. I mean, they've got huge fangs. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they have all the features of a human being, but they've, you know, they're killing machines if they want to be.
So it's a little different of a episode for us, of a topic, I guess, because we normally do crime, but I really think this is almost crime. This is kind of true crime. There was a crime committed here by an animal. Well, and by this human too. There's a lot to talk about. This story is very complex and very interesting. And if you guys are interested in these stories, let us know, because I know plenty of interesting chimpanzee stories. I'm telling you, there's a lot of crazy stories because they're also very emotional animals and they can get angry at people. It's not always just such a random thing.
Well, it sounds like this chimp dealt with like severe mental illness.
He did. And he was being treated for that. I mean, it's very complex.
So what's this chimp's name that you keep referring to?
Travis. We're talking today about... Did I not even say his name? We're talking about Travis the chimp. This is one of the most, I guess, popular chimpanzee attack stories. But there are so many of them, for real. Janelle, there's this one I was reading about earlier. There was a group of chimpanzees. Oh, you heard this with me. They were so mad at their zookeeper, whoever was watching them. I think it was some type of sanctuary. He brought one of them a birthday cake and didn't give the rest of the chimps a birthday cake. And they all mauled him because they were so jealous that they didn't get a cake as well. That's how like emotional they can get.
They have this sense of like fairness.
Yeah.
You know, and if
they do, things if they feel fair, wronged.
Then, yeah. Feel like you've done them wrong. Then they make you pay. Mm-hmm. They even do that to their own. I mean, there's, you know,
brutal to their own.
Different. I know there's like videos out there of chimpanzees literally taking down like one of the, you know, adult males in the group because of, for whatever reason, they didn't like what he was doing, and they cannibalize him, they murder him, they use stones and like beat him to death, like dissect them.
Yeah
you never really, like, growing up, you know, you learn about chimpanzees and like the first like chimpanzee I learned about was Curious George. The Curious George
chimpanzee.
Well, there's a debate whether he had a tail or not, but
he didn't have
a tail, so
he was,
I think,
right?
He is a chimp, yeah. But like as a kid, that's kind of like your first, you know, you start learning about monkeys and stuff like that. But, you know, then you go to the zoo and you get to see the monkeys at the zoo. But you never really, you know, until you really dive into like the world of National Geographic, you really start realizing, you know, what these animals are capable of and how, you know, you always think of like gorillas being big and strong and like could mess you up. But You never really consider the idea that a chimpanzee could absolutely destroy you if it wanted to.
Yep.
And the fact that, you know, people think that it's okay to have these types of animals as personal pets is very controversial. I mean, a lot of people feel a certain type of way about it, but, you know.
And for good reasons, because there's so many examples of this where people will get, you know, a small little cute chimpanzee, and then it grows up to be an adult man that's almost like roided out. Like they're like insanely strong.
Testosterone raging through their system.
So today we are going to be talking about Sandra Harold, who is the owner of Travis the Chimp, and Sharla Nash,
who's her best friend.
Who is her best friend.
And the victim is her in best this friend. Case.
Yeah. Yes. But I mean, I meant like they're not friends anymore.
Right, right.
So...
yeah, this is the story of...
It is. I'm glad Travis, we're finally doing this. I know it's a lot for Janelle. She was very against this from the beginning.
No, it's fine. It's just pretty...
You're gonna survive.
It's pretty gnarly, but it's pretty warning. It's pretty gnarly.
It is. It is. But it's. I think it's really important to educate people about the dangers of having exotic wild animals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it really is. So that is what we're going to be diving into today.
Yep.
This episode of Mile High Podcast is brought to you by Function of Beauty, Third Love, Native, Raycon, and Candid CO. Also, we do have some merch from our last 420 collection that's still out there. So go and get it while you can. Mm-hmm. I think we've restocked a few items. So if you know there was something on there that you got on the website and it was out of stock, go back and check again because it's most likely back in stock.
I think we're working on tumblers. It might take a little while, but
yeah.
Or are they back?
We'll be getting them back ASAP. They're probably up right now as we're speaking. So,
but thank you guys so much for the support on that drop. We were surprised to have sold out of things like, and for all of your support with Higher Love Wellness, our first sale. We had a ton of orders and so much great feedback. I mean, some of you got your orders in like 2 days. Some of you, you know, it's really unpredictable with the post office right now. It's like all over the place.
It really is. We have no idea how long things are going to take to get to people. Sometimes
it seems
it's
like
faster,
it's getting better. Shorter. It seems like it's getting better. Fingers crossed.
Let's hope so.
But anyway, you ready to get in?
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into the story of Travis the chimp.
Okay, so let's start with Sandra Harold. So Sandra was born in 1938. Her parents owned a popular bakery in downtown Stamford, Connecticut. Sandra grew up as an only child and grew up around animals. So obviously animals were kind of her friend. She had a beloved German shepherd named Gretchen, and she took care of horses on her parents' land as well. So Sandra got married right out of high school, but the marriage didn't last. And then she got married again and had a daughter named Suzanne in 1961. She adored her second husband, but they had violent fights over his affairs, and they divorced after only 4 years. When she was 30, she got married for a third time, this time to a guy named Jerry Harold. He was a kind man, and he gave Sandy and her daughter Sue a stable life. Everything was easier for them, and that is, you know, a big part of why she was attracted to him. He also adored Sue and raised her as his own daughter, so they were happy. They moved in with Sandy's parents on Rock Ribbon Road in Stamford, and they started several businesses together, and one of them really took off. They ran this towing service and an auto repair shop, and it was so successful that they actually became millionaires doing this.
Wow, that's pretty
intense,
impressive.
Right? For auto stuff, it's hard to do. Eventually, they started getting into horse competitions. They started taking them to barrel racing events at local rodeos, and Sandy did races, and they became pretty good at it. When they were at Loretta Lynn's traveling rodeo, she met an 18-year-old woman named Sharla Nash. Now, Sharla was born in 1953. She had two brothers and was a rodeo cowgirl her whole life. Sharla also always had a deep affection for animals, especially horses. When she was 17, she left home and started following rodeos all around the country. Now, when she met Sandy, they had an instant connection, and eventually they developed a really close bond and became lifelong friends. So one day, the two of them were at one of these rodeos, and they watched this event where a chimpanzee was dressed as a cowboy and was riding a horse around the ring. Like, how degrading and ridiculous. But anyway, Sharla and Sandy ended up meeting this chimp after the show, and he took gummy bears from Sandy's hand, and she was very charmed by him. So at the next show, this chimp spotted Sandy in the crowd. And so he jumped off the horse and ran all the way over to her and jumped in her arms. So clearly he had some type of connection
to her. Yeah, took a liking to her.
Really liked her.
Yeah.
Or maybe he just, you know, liked the gummy bears.
Yeah, exactly.
That's probably what it was.
Yeah.
So soon Sue started barrel racing events alongside her mom, and she took a job at the family business. They were a very close-knit group of people and loved spending every day together. Eventually, Sue started dating an employee at the tow shop, and the two of them fell in love. They got married and they moved away. And around the same time, Sandy's parents both died. So she kind of felt like she was losing everything at once and started to feel really lonely and bitter and wasn't really sure what the next chapter of her life was going to look like. So that was what was going on with Sandy around this time. Let's talk a little bit about Travis the chimp.
So Travis the chimpanzee was born on October 21st, 1995. And he was owned by Connie Casey, who is a breeder of chimps located in Festus, Missouri, which is a rural area outside of St. Louis. His father, Coco, was actually captured from the jungles of Africa, and Casey paid $12,000 for him. His mother was a retired chimp from a zoo named Susie. And shortly after his birth, Connie called Sandy and told her, "Your baby has arrived, and it's a boy." Before Sandy got there, Connie tranquilized Susie and took the baby chimp from her cage, which
absolutely sick.
That's not going to be good for poor Susie getting her baby stolen from her. So Sandy flew to the Lambert St. Louis International Airport and then drove to the breeders to pick up her new son. And soon after, she named him Travis Tritt after her favorite singer. But when Sandy held her tiny newborn chimp in her arms, it made her so happy that she cried. She then paid Connie $50,000 for Travis.
So crazy.
And brought him home at 3 days old.
That is like a nice car. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, $50,000. I mean, yeah, I guess it makes sense if they're a millionaire. So that was nothing to them, probably.
That's true. Yeah.
To go and whatever. Buy a chimpanzee. So just to give you a little background on chimps, because I think it's important in this story to really understand chimpanzees and, you know, kind of some background info on them.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
So, chimpanzees are the closest living relatives of human beings. They actually share up to 98% of our DNA.
98%.
Yeah, they're very, that's crazy. There's like just 2% difference between us and them.
A lot of people don't realize that, you know, just how much.
Yeah.
It's a high number.
It is. And like we just mentioned, they're not monkeys. They're one of four species of great apes, which they are gorillas, bonobos, orangutans, and chimpanzees. Chimps are also an endangered species that's nearing extinction. Mm-hmm. So, you know, according to the World Wildlife Fund, there are only about 172,000 to 300,000 left in the world. And there may be fewer than 120,000 left in the wild. Chimpanzees live in troops, which are dominated by an alpha male, and they live in forests and savannas of Central and West Africa. And these troops are close-knit family groups of up to 120 chimps. And in the wild, they live for about 30 to 35 years. But if they're well cared for in captivity, such as in a sanctuary, they can live for 50 mm-hmm. or 60 years. Adults are usually about 3 to 4 feet tall and 60 to 150 pounds or more. And chimps in the wild stay with their mother and nurse until they're about 5 years old. So this poor chimp was taken from his mother 3 days old. They're meant to live for 5 years with their mother.
So that obviously has to do something mentally to the chimp.
Oh, absolutely.
It just would be impossible to not affect them.
Yeah. I mean, in the wild, it would be. And in the wild, they keep traveling with their mother until they're young adults around 13. That's how long they're like together with their mother for.
It's got to affect you the same, you know, affect a chimp the same way it would affect a human to be taken from their mother that early. That's got to have trauma.
Oh, I'm sure it has something to do with their psychology.
If you don't have a motherly figure, you know.
Right, right. And most chimps sold as pets are taken from their mother when they're just a few days old, like Travis. Mm-hmm. But by the time chimps are 5 years old, they're usually too strong for a human to handle and can't stay living in a private residence.
Right.
But those that are raised with humans can't go to a zoo either because they weren't taught how to socialize with other chimps. Mm-hmm. And imagine, you know, bringing a human-raised chimp to even a sanctuary of you know, wild chimps to some extent. Probably is not going to be good for that chimp. It's going to be cast out from the troop. So even though chimps seem to share so much of the human experience and human emotions, they do have their own distinct verbal and nonverbal language to express their emotions and lived experiences with each other. They can learn and borrow from human communication, but what they actually feel and perceive about the world around them is unique to chimpanzees. Very important to understand. So Sandy and Jerry bonded with Travis right away and treated him like, you know, he was really their son.
Their baby. Yeah. Which I have, like, I mean, we've seen, like, remember that one show we watched forever ago about the couple and they had all the baby chimps and they were like their kids. They never had kids and they did. I mean, I don't know if those were chimpanzees though.
Yeah. Not, I think
they were smaller.
Probably some type of monkey.
Some type of primate, but.
I mean, there's a lot of people out there that own monkeys. Yeah.
And I certainly don't want to shame every single person who has one.
Because, I mean, a lot of monkeys stay small, too. They're never going to get to a point where they're probably capable of killing you.
But I think a lot of people that end up buying exotic pets in general, like this I know happens with the micro pigs all the time, is people buy, which I believe doesn't even exist. A micro pig isn't even an actual thing. They just tell people that. And that's how people get in over their heads. You know, you buy this cute little baby chimp when they're a baby, and then it eventually, I mean, they live really long, and they get overwhelming for people. And that's definitely what happened here. Like these all these pictures of them holding them as a baby, like, I'm sure this was all really cute and they were attached to him. But
yeah, I mean, she bought him all kinds of nice clothes and dressed him every morning. She also bottle fed him, burped him, and put him down for naps in a crib.
I mean, it's totally adorable. Like, I've seen people put, I follow TikTok accounts with people that have monkeys and they dress them up in little clothes and they are like little human babies. So it's cute. I see the appeal for why. I used to always tell my parents, I'm going to own a chimpanzee one day. I want a chimpanzee one day. Obviously, I, you know, had no idea what I was talking about, but
yeah,
they're really cool animals. I see why people end up.
They are. And I mean,
them.
They are so similar. I mean, it's the animal that is closest to us.
Yeah.
So it's a, I guess in a lot of people's eyes, a viable replacement to a human child is a chimpanzee, but
they really can't. I mean, the way that they feel emotions, the way they react to certain things, react to toys. Like, I've seen monkeys like playing with slime and Play-Doh, and they really are like children.
Yeah. I mean, they can even play video games. I think we talked about this like a few weeks ago. Neuralink, Elon Musk company, has been using his technology he's creating that's eventually going to be used by humans on chimpanzees. And chimpanzees have been able to, with their just brain waves, play that Pong game, you know, the two paddles thing, hitting the ball back and forth.
Yep.
And they've been able to sit there and play that with their own, you know, brain waves.
Yeah.
So that's how similar they are. Is it like that? And that's why we sent chimpanzees to space. I mean, the chimp was like one of the first.
It's like the closest way to see how it could be for us. Yeah.
Right. I mean, because they are so similar.
Totally. They really are. And the way that, definitely the way that they feel and express emotion, you can tell even in their facial expressions, like they'll do like the eyebrow, one eyebrow up, like you can tell confusion in their face or love in their face or anger. Mm-hmm. Just, they're so expressive.
It makes me wonder if, you know, how much Sandy actually knew about chimpanzees before she got Travis. Like, did she actually research what a full grown male chimpanzee is like or capable of?
How much information was there, even though, when she was like, you know, first adopting him, how much was on the internet at that point? I mean, I guess she could go to the library, but she clearly did not realize what she was getting into.
No.
Or did, and just did it anyway.
Just ignored it. Who knows? Yeah, exactly. So Sandy and Jerry marked Travis's milestones, like rolling over the first time and learning to walk across the floor, balancing on his knuckles. And Travis was a quick learner. He picked up their language and learned how to care for himself. He even brushed his teeth and used the toilet. He also took baths with them. He ate meals at the table and even went out to eat at their favorite restaurant. Can you imagine being at a restaurant and you look over and there's a chimpanzee in the booth next to you?
I'd be lit.
I mean, that'd be cool.
But I'd also be concerned. I'd be very concerned.
I would be concerned.
I'd be excited for a second, and then the concern would hit.
Yeah, don't like, give that chimp a bad look, man.
Yeah, and just like, what the fuck, people? Right. What the hell?
And Sandy would be there, and she'd be like reading the menu out loud to Travis, like, so that he could like figure out what he wanted to get.
That's honestly really cute,
though. It is. And at home, Travis got his own drinks and snacks, and he even microwaved steam-in-a-bag vegetables. So he knew how to use a microwave.
Damn.
That's pretty impressive.
He could have probably just like lived alone in there without them.
Yeah.
What if he probably got to the point one day he was like, let me just eat these people and then
take over their house. Travis loved to eat oatmeal for breakfast every day, and some of his other favorite foods were filet mignon, lobster tail, Lindt's chocolates, Nerds, taffy, and ice cream.
I didn't know they could eat all these things.
I don't, I feel like that's,
I'm sure it's
can't
not
be good,
good.
But yeah. Oh yeah. Remember we watched that, that documentary I was talking about a long time ago, that monkey was like obsessed with cake and like ate cake all the time, and they were like constantly giving it cake.
Yeah.
That can't be good.
No, it's going to fatten them up. That's what they're gonna do.
Yeah.
Apparently, whenever the ice cream truck would drive by their house, Travis would get excited and Sandy would walk him outside to get a treat. Mm-hmm. Jerry also taught Travis how to play catch and ride a bike. He even taught them how to use the lawnmower and feed their horses.
Literally, if you are not watching YouTube, there's a picture of Travis operating the fucking lawnmower.
That's wild. I mean, that just shows you how intelligent they are. I mean,
yeah. And then get this, dude. He also drove. This motherfucker knew how to drive a car. And Sandy would let him sit on her lap and take the wheel of her Corvette, which was his favorite car.
Now, I'm confused because typically Corvettes are stick shift. So what the fuck?
He knew how to
was
shift.
He driving a stick shift or maybe it was an automatic? I don't even know if they make automatic Corvettes.
Dude, if that's the case, Travis is smarter than me because I cannot drive a stick. I've tried several times. It's just not going to happen.
It probably was. That's a good point. It probably was a stick on especially an older Corvette like that. I guarantee
I'm
it was
like,
a stick.
Yeah, what? But how did he get his legs all the way down to the clutch?
Or maybe, I don't know if he ever just like drove by himself though. Maybe he was just on her lap and she was doing like the brakes and pedaling and the shifting and he was just steering.
Well, I mean, as an adult, I mean, once you get to that full grown size, I'm sure they could slide the seat up enough to where he could sit there and like reach down with his little toes, his little finger
toes. So what if you're an officer and you just look over and there's a fucking chimp driving on someone's lap?
That's what I'm saying. Like, was he literally driving down the street to King Supers?
No,
or was
I doubt
he like
it.
In the like driveway, like
in the field?
I think it was, he was on, first of all, it was just on her lap. He wasn't just like taking the car for spins. But even if you saw that though, like what would they even excuse me, ma'am, are you driving with a chimp on your lap?
Seriously though. But Sandy and Jerry were continuously amazed at how much he was like them.
Yeah,
he was an amazing problem solver. He showed empathy and had a delightful sense of humor. He loved to tease Sandy when she was on the phone by flipping through the channels on the TV as fast as he could. And Travis really enjoyed watching TV, especially sports. He watched baseball games with Jerry and cheered for his favorite team. Sandy also dressed him in a blue bikini and big gold hoop earrings to spend the day at the beach. She literally took Travis everywhere with her, like on a leash, put a diaper on him and like walk him around wherever she went.
Can you imagine seeing this? Like, he's big already at this point. There's a picture of him here on the leash and he's got to weigh more than her at this point. What would you do if you're like walking your dog and you see someone walking their chimp?
Mind my own business.
Yeah. Mind my own business.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to go
don't
up
make
to
eye
it.
Contact.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm not definitely, trying to get killed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Sandy and Jerry completely changed their lives for Travis. They caged in a room in the back of their house for him and they put in tire swings and ropes. He also had his own bed and a big comfy chair. They also put a mattress in their room where he slept most nights.
Big deal. We have a room for our bunny too.
That's true.
Our bunnies.
Your bunnies.
They've got their own bunny suite.
His room led to an enclosed outdoor area as well.
That's cool though.
And that side of the house was locked off from the rest and became Travis's suite. And when Sandy and Jerry were home, he could go wherever he wanted in the house. And when he was left alone, he could roam freely in his suite. And they made sure he was safe by using reinforced locks on areas he wasn't allowed in. Their property also had tall oak trees, and they added swings and ropes for him to play on. They even started taking him to work with them at the tow shop every day. And everybody that worked there absolutely adored Travis. They even converted a room above the shop into his special area with ropes, tires, and trampolines. And there's literally pictures of him like swinging around this tow shop. They literally made like a jungle gym for him at their workplace.
They also ended up building a loft apartment next to her shop for her daughter Sue and her son Tyler, so their grandson. She had just recently left her husband and moved back home with them to work in the shop. So Travis loved playing with her son Tyler. And for a while, they were almost like peers. As Travis grew up, he became very protective of Tyler. And we will get more into Sandy's friend, Sharla, when we get back from our ad break.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
So one day, Sandy's friend Sharla from the rodeo ended up visiting the shop with her young daughter, Brianna. At this point, Travis was still little and still drinking from a bottle, and Sharla was surprised to see Travis. She didn't even know that her friend had gotten a chimp. You know, it's not something you expect when you go over to someone's house. So Sandy ended up taking a picture of Travis and Brianna posing together. beaming with pride as he gently stroked the little girl's long blonde hair. So Travis clearly loved little kids. Charlotte ended up visiting again by herself when Travis was a little older this time. He jumped down from a tree onto Charlotte's back and pulled out some of her hair. And she told Sandy that that had really hurt, but Sandy just laughed it off. It's kind of like when you go to someone's house and they have a huge dog that's like jumping on you and like ripping you.
They just want to say hi. They just want to say hi. I'm like, just want you to give him a hug.
But also, I remember as a kid, that would scare the crap out of me. Yeah. Like, dogs are so much stronger than me.
Like, ouch. Please at least like try to be like down, down. Like, I understand sometimes dogs do that. My dogs jump on people, but you know, yeah. Hurts. Like,
sorry, my chimp just pulled your hair out.
Yeah. Ha ha ha.
Like, he likes you.
Yeah, maybe he just likes you. And Travis seemed to love posing for photos. He actually was the mascot of the tow shop. His picture was on their trucks. He went along on tow calls sometimes. And everyone in the town knew Travis and wanted to get a picture with him. Some people even let him hold their babies for a picture.
Oh my God.
I know.
Wild, man.
Well, looking back and
yeah.
So Travis was always excited to meet new people, obviously, and his favorite people of all were police officers, strangely enough.
Interesting.
Every cop on the force knew Travis, and there's multiple pictures with different officers. We'll put them up on the screen. So clearly everyone was felt big really fan. Comfortable with him. Yeah, big fan.
Well, and at this point, you know, in most of these pictures, he's still like, mm-hmm. you know, he's not full grown yet. So he's not like, you know,
still kind of like a baby.
Yeah, it's kind of in between.
When Travis was 5, Sandy's daughter Sue got married again. And she and her husband moved to the Outer Banks in North Carolina so he could open a business. And then they had 2 more kids together. Sandy was devastated that Sue had moved away. And she actually did not like her new son-in-law. She blamed him for taking her daughter away from her. So sounds quite toxic. But they also did stay very close through this. And Sue was actually just as unhappy to be away from her mom. She called her every day and would send her letters. Sorry if you guys can like hear any rain or thunder or strange sounds. There's like a huge rainstorm happening here right now, which we honestly don't get a lot of rain in Colorado. So we don't often have to deal with this. But as every you can see, Josh's shirt is like covered in rain. He just had to run outside.
Yeah, every now and then we get severe thunderstorms. And today's just happens to be one of those days.
Yep.
But anyways, Sandy would read these letters out loud to Jerry and then preserve them in plastic. She would send money and gifts to Sue and her grandkids all the time. Sue drove back and forth from North Carolina to Connecticut to visit her mom often. And in September 2000, she was on her way back to North Carolina with her infant daughter. Earlier that day, she had some back pain and ended up taking a Percocet. And somehow, she ended up veering off the highway and slamming into a tree. With her daughter in the car. Her daughter wasn't hurt at all, but Sue was actually thrown from the car and killed due to this accident. Mm-hmm. As a result, Sandy was a wreck. And during the funeral, when she saw her son-in-law, she screamed, "That's that bastard. If it wasn't for him, my daughter would be alive."
Which doesn't even make sense as what we know.
Yeah, I mean, it seems pretty clear that the Percocet had something to do with the accident. But for years, Sandy was very angry and depressed, and she lost touch with her grandkids and most of her friends in general, and was even suicidal. She'd spend her days with Jerry and Travis, who is now the only child she had left. They settled into a quiet routine, and one night Travis wanted to try Jerry's wine, and he liked it. And they began a nightly ritual of having a glass together every evening.
What the fuck?
Drinking alcohol with your chimp? Mm.
Sounds like a smart idea, bro.
Sandy also started taking Travis to the beach again. She brought their dog along with them, and Travis held his leash as they walked along. In October of 2003, the three of them were watching the World Series together and rooting for the Yankees. Sandy and Jerry had to make a quick trip to the shop and took Travis along for the ride. So they climbed into their SUV, and Travis buckled himself in, and he rolled his window down about halfway down. And when they were stopped at an intersection downtown, someone threw an empty bottle through Travis's window. He didn't react much, he just grunted and quietly got out of the car. He then ran across the street and jumped up toward a person in a playful manner. He then started rolling in the street and people started laughing and crowding around. Travis realized he was the center of attention and started jumping on cars and chasing people. And people were just honking their horns and cheering. At this point, the traffic was completely blocked off. And the police arrived after a few minutes. And Travis was very excited to see his friends in blue. And...
Yeah, he loves cops.
Yeah, ran over to them, patted their butts, and ran off. He then started playing a game where he'd climb back into the SUV and then jump out the other door at the last second. And Sandy and Jerry couldn't get him to stay long enough in order to lock the doors. And this went on for 2 hours. Finally, though, he seemed to get tired of the whole thing and just got back into the SUV on his own. And when the officers wrote up the report of what happened, they said Travis was, quote, playful the entire time. The State Department of Environmental Protection was also told about the incident. They ended up looking into it and realizing that Sandy and Jerry were in violation of a new law. Because Travis weighed more than 50 pounds, they needed a permit to keep him. Because by now, Travis was closer to 200 pounds. But since he was a local celebrity and beloved by the community and had never hurt anyone, they just let it go. The local animal control officer, though, was very concerned. And she had a serious talk with Sandy, explaining that Travis was now an adult and fully sexualized. And in the wild, chimps have sex up to 50 times a day.
Sounds exhausting.
Holy
Not
shit.
For a chimp. Travis also had the strength of at least 5 men. Adult chimps are unpredictable and violent, and they live for 50 or 60 years, and there was no way that Sandy and Jerry could keep him forever. They had to send him to a sanctuary. Sandy listened, but she wasn't really worried. She knew Travis wasn't violent, and he had never done anything to make her think he'd hurt someone. But they decided to stop taking him out in public, and instead they started spending a lot of time at home as a family. However, there was something Sandy was keeping to herself. A few years before the incident downtown, she got a call from Connie Casey, the breeder who sold her Travis. Connie told her that Travis's parents, Coco and Susie, had escaped with another chimp. They had gotten out of their cage and left the ranch. A man named Jason Coates, who was 17 years old, lived nearby, and he had happened to be pulling into his driveway with friends when the three chimps surrounded them and forced them back into the car. The chimps then rocked it back and forth and bared their teeth at them. Connie ended up rushing over and shot Susie with a tranquilizer to subdue her, and Jason had to run into his house to get a shotgun. Susie was sitting on the curb, dazed and picking at the grass, and Connie begged Jason not to shoot, but he ended up firing 3 rounds at Susie, and Susie died a few hours later.
It's so fucked up because I feel like these animals, it's, you know, they're really not supposed to be here. This is why they shouldn't be.
Right.
You know, it's unfair to them at the end of the day.
Well, and they clearly escaped probably for a reason, too. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. They didn't want to be captive anymore.
Yeah.
The neighbor said that the chimps were never violent, and Jason was actually found guilty of animal abuse and property damage. He actually spent 1 month in jail. But he never changed his story and insisted that the chimps were violent and dangerous. By early spring 2005, Jerry was having some health problems. In March, he felt bad enough at work to ask one of the employees to take him to the hospital. When Sandy rushed over, they found out that he had stomach cancer, and he had been admitted to the hospital and spent several weeks there, and Sandy was with him every second that she could. Travis was confused, though. He didn't understand why Jerry wasn't home. Sandy tried to let him hear Jerry's voice on the phone, but it only made things worse.
Well, it's just like a dog, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
That dogs do sense when one of their owners isn't home. Like, if I was in the hospital, our dogs would totally know, like, where's mommy? They'd be stressed out and stuff. But imagine with a chimpanzee, when they understand so much more and you can't communicate with them and tell them, like, where they are, they're automatically going to think this person is dead or gone forever.
Right, you know? Right. So Travis literally got depressed and he would sit for hours rocking back and forth. He took pictures of Jerry off the wall and would hold them close to his chest.
It's honestly so cute. It just shows you how emotionally in touch they are.
One day, Jerry told Sandy that if he died, she had to send Travis to his sanctuary. He told her that she couldn't handle him alone. And sure enough, Jerry ended up passing away on April 12th. His illness came on so suddenly, and Sandy barely had any time to process it. She also became depressed and withdrawn, and she stopped talking to her friends. And Travis was just as bad. Every night, he waited for Jerry to come home to have a glass of wine with him.
It's so sad. It's not like she can explain to him.
No, like, they can't speak English.
And it's like, you got to feel bad for Sandy too. Like, as much as criticisms for Sandy, like, it does. It's very sad when you have basically Jerry and
lose part Travis. Of your family.
Yeah, it's like she's just down to Travis. And then now the idea that I might have to give him to a sanctuary because I can't do this on a. She must have been so depressed.
Yeah. And when Sandy would cry, Travis would console her. He brushed her hair and filed her nails while she cried.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. He also started sitting at the window late at night making happy noises. Sandy actually consulted with a psychic who told her Jerry was visiting Travis. And Jerry talked to Travis and then would kiss Sandy goodnight. Sandy set up a trust fund for Travis in case anything happened to her. A year after Jerry died, she wrote a letter to a chimpanzee sanctuary in Florida. She said she was coming down for a member event and wanted to meet in order to talk about Travis, and she hoped that they could take him. She signed the letter, Sandy, Jerry, and Travis, and she also wrote a check for $250 and signed it from her and Travis, and she put them in an envelope with family pictures, address sealed and stamped. But Sandy never went to Florida and actually never mailed that letter.
It's like in her gut, she knew it was wrong for her to keep him, but she just couldn't do it.
Couldn't let
go.
He's
like, I mean, all she has. She's family. Lost her daughter. I mean,
yeah.
Now her husband, he's the only person, right. the only being she has left.
Yeah, makes sense. Meanwhile, Sharla moved to Stamford with her daughter Brianna in 2009. Sharla at this point was in her early 50s and Brianna was 12. They had fallen on hard times the last couple of years. And Charlotte did the best that she could in order to support her daughter. She worked odd jobs, did yard work, and even cleaned horse stalls. But they had actually spent over a year living in a homeless shelter. And that's when Sandy had an idea. The loft apartment next to the shop was empty, so she offered it to Charlotte and Brianna rent free. Charlotte started working in the shop and helping Sandy out around the house.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
She did bookkeeping and handled dispatch at the tow shop, and she even took care of Sandy's property for her. She also watched Travis a few times, but he was so big now, she was afraid of him and didn't want to be left alone with him. Sandy still had trouble coping with everything that had happened to her. She had developed a compulsive shopping problem and spent hundreds of thousands at discount clothing stores like TJ Maxx. She also filled her house with bags of clothes and large plastic bins. And once they went into the bin, it was unlikely she'd ever look at them again. She blocked every room with these bins except for Travis's suite, so that's where they spent all their time. In 2008, she hired a construction crew to build a new addition to the house that Jerry had designed for Travis years before. And by now, Travis was 13 years old. He was 5 feet tall and weighed 240 pounds. And Sandy decided he needed some more space. But Travis was also very overweight. He had a receding hairline, a wrinkled face, and graying hair on his torso. Because Travis would spend his days watching TV, playing computer games, and eating. Sometimes he'd just wander around aimlessly around the house.
Sounds like a terrible life for a chimpanzee.
Yeah, it was very bad. Very unhealthy for him.
Yeah.
Sandy had even gotten him a pet cat named Misty, who could usually cheer him up.
It's so funny he has his own pet.
His own pet, right? But even Misty didn't seem to make him happy anymore.
He was experiencing real depression.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
So let's go to February 16th, 2009, the day that shit really hit the fan. Sandy was having a stressful day. She and Sharla, her friend from the rodeo scene, had just gotten back from a weekend trip to Mohegan Sun Casino and Resort in Uncasville, Connecticut. Sandy had paid for Sharla to get her hair done and also gave her some gambling money. And when they went to dinner that night, she had talked to the waiter and was showing him pictures of Travis. She was very proud of him, so she loved to talk about him. Sharla was 55 at this time, and Sandy was 70. But the old friends traveled well together, and they normally had a great time together. So once they got back, Sandy realized that Travis's room was filthy and really needed to be cleaned, but she had plans to meet a friend. So around 3 that afternoon, she was already running late and trying to get Travis's room in order as fast as she could. He had been agitated all day. He had turned on all 3 TVs in the house, but didn't even want to watch them. Sandy tried to give him a snack, asked him if he wanted to draw or play with Misty, but he wasn't interested in doing any of that. she felt like he seemed really anxious, and Travis had actually been prescribed Xanax by a doctor. So she decided that day that she was going to put Xanax into his afternoon tea. But even this didn't help. And he was also taking medication for Lyme's disease at the time. He had taken keys from the counter, went outside into the yard, and was jumping between cars, which is kind of his way of asking to go for a ride, because he did love leaving the house or getting in the car. So Sandy tried to get him back inside, but he just refused. So she called Sharla and complained that Travis seemed really irritated all day and was now refusing to come back into the house. During the conversation, Sharla agreed that she would come over and help. That's how good of a friend she was. Obviously, she has no experience in this. You'd think there's got to be someone better you could call in a situation like that, but maybe she was afraid that they would take him.
Well, she was already familiar with Travis. Travis knew her. So I'm sure introducing somebody new to him right now is probably not the best thing, but I see what you're saying, though.
But it's like, yeah. I just mean, I feel like if anyone had a good chance of getting Travis in, it's Sandy, right? Like, she's closer with him than Sharla.
But I mean, it's probably hard at 70 years old to be dealing with an adult 5 foot, 240 pound maybe she chimp.
But yeah, Sharla's older too, though. She's 55 and has no professional experience. It just seems like you would call a professional. That would be the best. And if only that had happened, right? So Sharla gets to the house at 3:40. She opens the gate, pulls into the driveway, and stopped the car over near the house. And she had brought a Tickle Me Elmo toy for Travis. This was something that he kind of liked. So she was hoping that it would cheer him up. It was his favorite toy. So when she stepped out of the car, she held the Elmo toy in front of her face. And since she had colored her hair a few days earlier, she looked much different than when Travis had last seen her. At this point, he was 35 feet away from her, and as soon as she steps out of the car with the Elmo, he notices her and starts charging at her.
Yeah, charging.
Uh-huh. So when he gets to her, he jumps onto her, knocks her against the car, and then knocks her down onto the ground. And she starts screaming and told Travis that it was her, Sharla, and in seconds, she was covered in blood. So this is just as soon as she gets out of the house. I mean, out of the car.
Yeah.
Like, it's automatically happening. She doesn't even have time to process. And Sandy is in the house during this. So she hears this and hears her screaming. So she comes running out of the house and starts bashing Travis in the head with a snow shovel, trying to get him to stop, because obviously she's aware of what chimpanzees can do. Like, I'd hope that over time she'd heard stories of these attacks that happen on humans. And so it was scaring her too. She was screaming. Travis was screaming. I mean, making horrible screeching noises. It was just complete chaos. And he would not stop attacking Sharla. And this is really just so disturbing. But he was ripping her skin off, literally ripping pieces of her skin off and then eating her flesh. And this was all happening while Sandy is watching this. Like, he went into, I mean, just a complete daze attack mode and could not be stopped. And eventually he started like eating her eyelids. That was the one thing that really stuck out to me, is that's what they do.
And go for your face.
Your face, your hands, your ears, like, you know, smaller parts of your body.
Well, they go for like what makes you human, you know, what looks most of them like another chimp would be, you know, the fingers, the face, the nose. They rip all that off.
So, and keep in mind, this chimp has the strength of, I mean, he is so
five
strong.
Adult males.
Yes. Yeah. And then Sandy is 70 years old. Charla's 55.
Yeah.
They
They're
have
no
chance
no
for, against him. And so Sandy runs back into the house and grabs a butcher knife, just screaming the whole time. And she had to go out there. And I can't imagine how hard this would have been for her. But in that moment, you know, you want to save your friend. You have to do this. She started stabbing him in the back. She only did it three times because he barely even noticed. Like, that's how amped up he was. And he was also drugged. So she tries to pull him off Sharla, but he's so massive that it's absolutely impossible. So he stood up for a second and looked back at Sandy. He looked right at her, but didn't do anything. Because he knows it's Sandy, and went right back to tearing Sharla apart. And this is all because her hair color was different.
Yeah, didn't recognize her.
Isn't that crazy?
I mean, that's what we think, at least. Obviously, we don't know for sure. But clearly, I mean, he was saw her as a threat. He was like, what are you doing here?
So Sandy started thinking maybe he's going to go after me next. We could both end up dead. Like she almost felt like there was no hope for her friend. So she ran to her car and locked the door and called 911 there. And this is how I first found this case. I actually just came across this 911 call on YouTube. Crazy. And fair warning, this is an intense call to hear. You can hear Travis screaming in the background. It's
wild.
It's wild, but it's important, I think, to understand the gravity of how this went down.
911, where's your emergency?
This is Sandy. 241 Rock Crimson Road.
What's the problem?
Send the police.
What's the problem there?
The chip killed my friend.
What's the problem with your friend?
Oh, please.
What's the problem with your friend? I need to know.
Send the police up with a gun. With a gun.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That is...
It really paints a picture of what was going on.
It's crazy because you can really hear Travis screeching in the background and she has to sit there in the car watching her friend get torn apart by her, you know, her son, her her chimpanzee. I mean,
about the friend? I mean, she's like aware of what's going on, while this is happening to her.
Can't even imagine.
The dispatcher just sounded like so confused, trying to just wrap his mind or it was fucking happening. What? Like, your chimp?
Yeah.
Like, good God. It's so fucking crazy.
Apparently, when the police got there, though, Travis had actually wandered away from Charla. And Charla was very quiet and still and covered in what looked like buckets of blood. Her clothes and skin were torn off. Pieces of her scalp and multiple fingers and teeth were thrown around. Her hands and face were gone. Travis had knocked a side view mirror off the police car. And he had tried all the doors until one opened, and he opened the driver's side door and stared at the officer inside. The officer was able to put his hand on his gun. Travis is baring his teeth and covered in Charla's blood.
Oh my God. Can you imagine rolling up to that car as an officer? I mean, that call?
That's got
to
be, like, you're not ready for that.
No, no one's thinking that's going to happen on their shift, right? No one wakes up in the morning thinking you're going to be dealing with
a chimpanzee
might murder you. Yeah. Like, oh my God.
But this officer was ready, and in a matter of seconds, he pulled his gun and loaded four rounds into Travis. And Travis stumbled back a bit, defecated on the ground, and then made a terrible high-pitched sound before he turned and ran off. One of the officers then stepped over to Charla, who miraculously was still alive.
Yes.
She actually moved what was left of her arm toward him. Several other officers searched for Travis, but he had slipped back into the house through the open front door. And so they were able to follow the trail of blood into the house. And that's where they found Travis collapsed in his room and dead.
And it's sad because, you know, he should have never been there in the first place.
Right. I mean, it's not like... He's a wild animal at the end of the day, and wild animals, no matter how trained you might think they are or how, you know,
how in control
domesticated
you are.
They are, it's just like they have instincts.
And they live so long, especially like a 70-year-old woman in charge of a chimpanzee who has like mental illness. He was depressed and struggling. And it's just like people get so in over their heads in these situations.
So before we get into the aftermath of this attack, we're going to take one more ad break.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Today. So, as many of you are probably super relieved to hear, Charlotte did survive this attack, but it was brutal. Absolutely insane. The first responders actually called it horrendous. And, you know, they see the worst of the worst. And the first responders actually rushed to her aid before the scene was even secure, essentially risking their own lives to save hers. And thankfully they did, because they did save her life. Travis had broken nearly every bone in her face. Her mid-face bone structure was completely gone.
Oh my God.
Her eyelids were ripped or chewed off. And that's something that they go for a lot, the eyelids.
Yeah.
Oh, that just makes my skin crawl. He tore off her lips, her jaw, ripped away most of her scalp, damaging her brain tissue. Her nose was almost completely ripped off. One of her hands was completely torn off as well, and the other was mostly gone. The first responders said that they looked like they had been put through a meat grinder. She lost half of the blood in her body, dude.
I'm honestly absolutely shocked that she survived this attack.
I mean, know. Incredible.
I mean, kudos to the first responders. Yes. Because, I mean, she could have easily bled out at that scene. And if they hadn't risked their lives, then she would have absolutely died there.
I know. It's like, it's crazy how it really does depend on who responds to your accidents. Because we were watching a documentary the other night. We're going to be covering this story soon. And the first responders in the case didn't react fast. They decided to wait.
2 hours, to respond.
And because of them, a ton of people died.
Right.
So it's good to hear people like this that clearly are in it for the right reasons, and that's to save lives. She also contracted a disease in her eyes from Travis, and doctors had to completely remove them, which means she was now permanently blind. When she arrived at Stanford Hospital, she was conscious, which is amazing.
Yeah, like, it really is.
Wow.
I would think that you'd be unconscious. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I would pass out from that.
The shock, right? Yeah. And that makes it even worse thinking that she was like awake during the, I can't even think about it.
I mean, that also goes back to show that the first responders were able to keep her conscious. Cause like things go downhill really quick if somebody with traumatic injuries like this go unconscious. I mean, it's very likely that person's going to go into shock and then, you know, die as a result.
Yeah, your body wants to shut down naturally because it's in such shock. Yeah. So I'm sure they were talking to her, Sharla, stay awake.
It's really a miracle that she was still conscious and alive at the
This whole story is a miracle. Yeah. That's why I wanted to talk about it. Because like, I don't know if I would have chosen to talk about this story on this podcast because if she had not survived. Died, she spent 3 days in the hospital and had more than 7 hours of surgery by 4 teams of surgeons just the first day. And they repaired what they could, but it was pretty bad. I mean, the picture of her afterwards, we're going to go ahead and put it up. But warning, if you're squeamish for that type of thing, look away, don't look. It's really, really hard to see. It almost doesn't look real.
Yeah, it's just pretty alarming to, I mean, Travis basically rearranged her whole face and removed major pieces of it.
Just the amount of swelling.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So they reattached her jaw and her thumb to her right hand. They found chimpanzee hair and teeth implanted in her bone. She was awake for that. And obviously it was incredibly difficult for her family to see her like that. Imagine. She was such a beautiful woman, you know, their beautiful mother. And then this happens.
Yeah.
Because a chimpanzee attacked them. Like, what? They'd be, oh, wow. The shock that everyone would be in.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Even the staff members who treated her when she first arrived were given counseling to help them cope with the trauma.
Yeah.
That was just a result of taking care of her. Mm-hmm. They ended up airlifting Sharla to Cleveland Clinic a few days after surgery, where she would stay for the next 16 months. She couldn't see or smell, and part of her thigh had to be used to reconstruct her nose, but she couldn't breathe through it.
It's amazing how they can do that, though.
I know. What surgeons can do nowadays is truly amazing. Mm-hmm. And she relied on the medical staff for everything. She couldn't eat or talk normally, and she had to drink all of her food through a straw. And the rehab was intense and emotional. In March of 2009, her family actually filed a lawsuit for $50 million against Sandy because a toxicology report confirmed that Travis had Xanax in his system. And this short-acting drug can obviously cause disorientation, aggression, hallucinations, or mania in humans. So it's also possible for a chimpanzee to have similar side effects. Others potentially at fault included the vet who prescribed the Xanax, the State Department of Environmental Protection, and the city of Stanford. And on May 6, 2009, a judge froze Sandy's assets, which were valued at $10 million. On November 11, 2009, Sharla actually revealed her face on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and Oprah actually went to the Cleveland Clinic to meet Sharla, who wore a veiled hat over her face, and it was her 56th birthday.
And we'll actually link these below because Oprah does not like to share content. Owen is going to copyright our asses. So yeah, we'll have it below if you would like to see that.
But Charlotte said that she felt like layers of gauze were covering her face at all times, but she wasn't in any pain. Charlotte also told Oprah that she wears the face covering almost all the time in order to avoid scaring people, but also because she knows the tabloids would pay a lot of money for a picture of her. And in fact, there was even a guard posted outside her door at all times in order to protect her privacy.
Yeah, this was really big in the media, actually.
It was, yeah.
I had no idea. I thought this was a lesser known thing, but I was talking to my dad about it this morning when he was asking what we were recording today. And he was like, oh my God, I totally remember that. It was all over CNN and stuff.
Yeah. Her daughter, Brianna, actually moved in with her friends while she finished high school, and her mother recovered after this. And in May 2010, Charlotte was sent to an assisted living home near Boston, and her family started a trust fund in order to raise money for her medical bills and her treatment, which I can't even imagine how much her medical bills were.
Yeah. It's got to be insane with the amount of reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
Plastic surgery is so expensive.
Million plus dollars of medical bills, if
possibly
not more.
So because this was such a huge story and people had so many questions about what angered this chimp so much, why was this chimp a pet? Should he have been a pet? Talking about, you know, what should laws be around this? And there was just a lot of gossiping going on online about how this all played out.
Right. And even like what chimp Travis really was. I mean, there was even rumors going around that Travis was the same chimp from Old Navy commercials in the 90s. And also appeared in multiple TV shows like The Mari Show and The Man Show. However, none of these rumors ended up being true, obviously. Mm-hmm. But there, I mean, a story like this just, you know, made headlines all over the world.
Yeah. And that was another problem with it, too, is like it was kind of lost in translation.
Yeah.
You know, there a bunch of different things were said that just weren't true because people were reporting in different countries and there was just.
Yeah.
I mean, or people would just straight up add things in to make it even more juicy.
Yeah.
People love a good headline.
Well, this is a crazy headline. Apparently, the New York Post ran a story that claimed Sandy was in a relationship with Travis, insinuating they had a sexual relationship.
That's
fucking wild.
I know. There was also a woman that came forward in 1996 claiming that Travis had tried to pull her into her car or a car and bit her hand. She also claimed that she reported it to the police, but there was no record of it. But I mean, plenty of times they just don't write things down. That happens all the time. So who knows? So when Sandy went to the crematorium to see Travis's body, she brought his favorite tie-dye t-shirt from home for him to be cremated with. So clearly this was still sad for her, even though she had to make that final call. She had to stab him and then,
I think there is no... There's no option. I mean, I think they either way, they'd have to put him down.
And what's so terrible to think about, and I'm sure hopefully she feels some guilt from this. I'm sure she does. But especially the fact that she considered sending him to a sanctuary, even wrote a note and attached the picture and shit and just never sent it.
Yeah.
She could have saved Charlotte.
Yeah, she could. And Travis.
Yeah. Yeah, and
still had a relationship with him until the end of his life or her life.
Got to go visit.
In a safe place, safe environment.
It's a shame. It's a total shame. I hope after all of this, at least someone was inspired to do that for their animal that they may have felt out of control with.
Right.
But when Sandy went to the crematorium to give him this tie-dye shirt, Travis's head had actually been removed to test for rabies. And when Sandy saw him, no one prepared her for that. She was absolutely traumatized and obsessed with it for months that they had decapitated her son. Sandy didn't leave her house after this for weeks. Reporters stayed outside for hours trying to get her to come out and talk again. They left her presents and wrote her condolence cards. And she ignored all of it because she obviously knew they don't actually care about her. They just want, you know, to get the next best headline.
Right.
And she didn't clean up Travis's blood in his room. She put a huge stuffed chimp in his favorite chair. She talked to her friends on the phone and would cry. And she was most upset about the claims that she didn't care about Sharla because there were a lot just being said about their friendship. She felt like, you know, she obviously did care about Sharla because she had stabbed her own son in order to save her. And she told the police to bring a gun and shoot him. When she started going out again, she spent most of her time in the casino or shopping. She, you know, was trying to fill the void, clearly. She filled her house with bins of shopping bags, and she could barely get from room to room. Total hoarding situation.
Yeah. Just coping.
Yep.
Coping with grief.
Trying.
Yeah.
She mostly just talked on the phone about Travis. She would eventually give up on people and started feeding raccoons and deers outside of her house. She just preferred animals. She ended up sponsoring a chimp named Chance, who lived with his owner in a mobile home in another state. Sandy visited Chance when he was about 1 year old and played with him for hours.
I'm sure that was good for her in some regard.
Yeah. Healing.
Yeah.
But she's got to be feeling like major guilt. In May of 2010, Sandy started having severe chest pains. She called a friend who called 911. She was taken to the ER by ambulance and rushed into surgery. And it turns out that she had a ruptured aortic aneurysm. And she died on the operating table on May 24th, 2010. She was 72. Her attorney released a statement that said multiple tragedies in Sandy's life had actually broken her heart one too many times, and she couldn't take anymore. She was buried next to Jerry with an urn on either side of her, one with the remains of her daughter Susan and one with Travis. There was a rumor that she hid $80,000 in cash in her house, and in the first 2 months after she died, people broke in five times looking for it.
Isn't
that crazy? Yeah, I know.
And Charla's lawsuit against Sandy actually was settled with her estate, and Charla received about $4 million. Charla tried to then sue the state of Connecticut a few years later, but the lawsuit was denied because at the time she was attacked, there was no law against a person owning a chimp.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, God.
So technically she wasn't like, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't like illegal ownership or anything.
It's just that she knew. She knew there what could have happened, you know,
right.
And that he was way out of control for her at that age, that she couldn't manage him anymore, and she still chose to keep him.
Right. And apparently the police officer who shot and killed Travis was denied coverage for therapy in order to treat the depression and anxiety he developed afterward.
Okay, I'm sure
that was
a
very
fuck.
Traumatic event
to
deal with. Yeah.
That's like not, I'm sure they don't have training for, well, maybe they do, but... To what extent can you even train for a situation like that in the police academy?
I don't think they train you to.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own. Surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Like, okay, we're going to send a wild chimp after you. Like, you can fight it.
Yeah, no. Well, and after this whole ordeal, the House of Representatives actually voted to pass a bill to effectively ban keeping monkeys, great apes, and lemurs as pets. However, the Senate never voted on it. So never went anywhere.
Because you still see it.
Yeah.
I still see people with monkeys and stuff on TikToks all the time. And I know some of them like do take really great care of them and are responsible. But it's just, there's got to be control because, people get in way over their heads.
But then in June 2011, Charla was still in recovery and she was hopeful that she would qualify for an experimental face transplant surgery. She initially wasn't a candidate for hand transplants because she couldn't see. But if she could get the donor hands and face from the same person, she could get new hands as well. And she would be the world's first face and double hand transplant recipient. So in June 2010, Charla arrived at Brigham and Women's Hospital, a Harvard teaching hospital and a world leader in transplantations. The team of surgeons who set out to make this dream a reality for Charla were led by Dr. Bodin Pomahack, and the preparation took nearly a full year. In May 2011, she finally received a donor face and hands, which was a huge gift and sacrifice from the donor family.
That is. It's very meaningful.
Yeah, yeah. The exact date of her surgery was never released to protect the privacy of the donor. But this transplantation surgery took 20 hours and actually went very well. The face transplant included the forehead, nasal structure, nose, lips, muscles, and nerves.
God, that's incredible.
Right?
And I can't even wrap my mind around that.
I know, the fact
that
they can transplant faces, I mean, pretty much everything now is just wild. And this was only the hospital's third full face transplant, and all of them were done by Dr. Bodin and his team.
Here's a little clip of the surgeon speaking about this surgery.
Today, our focus is on Charla Nash. And while I know you're all aware of the horrific ordeal that has led to Charla's needing our care, I'm not sure you're aware of the person Charla is. To us, she's not a woman who was mauled by the chimpanzee. To us, Charla is a courageous, strong person who inspired the team to do everything possible, using our collective expertise to restore her quality of life.
Unfortunately, after the surgery, though, Charla developed pneumonia and got really sick. And an infection caused poor circulation, and she unfortunately lost her new hands.
It's so sad.
And with her new face, Charla was able to smell again. She could eat and talk normally and kiss her loved ones. And she was no longer burdened by how people treated her disfigurement. I mean, it's night and day from, you know, where she was before to after the transplant.
She honestly looks really good. It's very impressive considering how bad was.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and if you're just listening, definitely just Google a picture of her face. You'll be really impressed. The before and after is really amazing. Her eyes look good.
Sadly, though, Charla suffered some brain damage from the attack. And she lived in a care home for a while and did facial exercises, speech therapy, and physical therapy every day.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up telling her story in Washington in support of the Captive Primate Safety Act.
Here's a clip of Charla talking about her experience in Washington.
I am Charla Nash. I'm here today to make sure that what happened to me never happens to anyone else ever again. In February 16, 2009, I was attacked and mauled by my boss's chimpanzee, Travis. He ripped off my face, my hands. They were able to salvage a thumb and sew it on sideways.
And eventually she was able to live pretty independently with an aide coming in to help her during the day on weekdays, but she's by herself on weekends and even leaves the house on her own. Here's another clip of an interview to show her progress after her body started to reject her transplant in 2016.
Well, this lung biopsy said a slight rejection. The success, it learned so much from all my testing.
And Charla has even more ambitious goals that she's working towards now. She wants to be able to ride horses again, maybe with the help of robotic arms, which technology is moving really quickly in that area.
Surprised. I mean, prosthetics have gotten so good.
Incredible.
I mean, that they virtually, I mean, almost better than anything biological you can get, you know, and you don't have to really worry about your body rejecting a biological transplant. So. Mm-hmm.
But she really does hope that one day she'll get a shot at another hand transplant. And I can see why you would want, you know, for a hand.
Sure. I mean, to lose touch on your hand would be really hard. So I get why you'd want to have that sensation again, for sure.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about exotic pets, which I know is going to be very controversial in this comment section. So exotic animals are defined as those who are not domesticated, but domestication does not mean born in captivity. It means hundreds of thousands of years of human-led selective breeding, causing gradual genetic and behavior modifications that are different from their wild ancestors. If an exotic animal seems tame in captivity, they are still wild, meaning they are unpredictable and dangerous, even in the best situations with the best trainers. I mean,
you see plenty of examples of that. You know, wild animals in captivity who, you know, have a relationship with their trainers and, you know, end up getting killed.
Yeah.
Because they're wild animals at the end of the day.
Right. 67% of US households, or 85 million households, have at least one pet, mostly cats and dogs. But exotic animal ownership is now on the rise. The exact numbers aren't known, but it's estimated that over 15,000 primates, 10,000 to 20,000 big cats, and 13.3 million small exotic mammals. Is that considering bunnies?
That's bunnies too, yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah, we have to see an exotic vet.
Yep. Mm. That's why the number's so much higher too than like primates and big cats is, because that's, I mean, that's encompassing anything small. That could be ferrets, that could be.
Yeah. But rabbits are domesticated. Our rabbits are domesticated exotic animals.
Right.
But they are illegal in certain parts of the world. Like a lot of our friends over in the UK can't have them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're invasive. For not because of any other reason.
If somebody lets them loose out.
Yeah, they can like repopulate and fuck up the farms.
That makes sense.
Also, 9.3 million reptiles are also kept in private U.S. homes as pets, which we all know a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
tons of people.
Most of us have had.
I mean, there's tons of YouTubers out there that have. Yeah. I mean, we used to watch one that has all kinds of exotic snakes and
really
poisonous.
Venomous ones. Yeah. And obviously, some people are doing it right. and setting a good example. But there is a severe lack of regulation and oversight in the exotic pet world and in the, you know, world of selling and breeding exotic pets.
And just owning them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's really no, you know, oversight of that at all.
Yeah. And it's a huge industry. It's a $2.15 billion per year industry in the United States alone. And it's also way too easy to get an exotic pet. Even in states with laws against keeping certain species as pets, there are no national databases and very little resources are available for oversight.
It's so easy, in fact, to get an exotic animal that there's literally a website called exoticanimalsforsale.net. And if you just browse this website, like the first thing that comes up is coyotes. You can buy a coyote for $700.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. And then there's like...
Please don't go to this website, by the way, or use this.
There's like bats on here. There's...
Bats?
Yeah, you can buy bats. There's a squirrel, baby squirrel monkeys for almost 10 grand.
Polar bears?
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff on here. You can buy camels to...
Oh, it says are keeping wolves. Polar bears as pets. Okay, I don't think they actually have polar bears. Let's hope.
But lots of wolves on here, like all kinds of stuff. Wallabies, Asian leopard cats, Bengals. I mean, there's all kinds of different things. And that's how easy it is. It's
dude,
it's
remember
affordable.
In the neighborhood next door to me, there was that dude like keeping a Siberian tiger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In our neighborhood. Yeah, you hear like, it was all the time. Literally across the street from my house. Someone drove by and saw them in the window, like just a fucking Siberian tiger looking out the window and called 911.
It's wild.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, that's wild. There,
that's literally what I mean, you're putting your whole neighborhood at risk if you got a tiger inside.
Yeah.
So the Animal Protection Institute tracks reported attacks or escapes of exotic pets. And they actually tracked over 120 captive large cat incidents since 1990. 75 non-human primate incidents since 1994 and nearly 200 reptile incidents since 1995, and nearly 75 incidents involving other exotics like bears, wolves, ferrets, and even a hippo since 1995. Somebody had a hippo?
That's the deadliest animal on the planet is the hippo.
Really?
Wild,
they kill more people, like, I'm pretty sure they kill like hella people.
Fact check that.
No, I literally watched a thing about it like last night.
The deadliest last night.
The hippo.
The deadliest animal is the hippo.
I think I've heard that before, actually, because people just assume that hippos are like nice.
Oh my god, I always thought hippos were nice.
No, they're
And it really is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've seen them snap a watermelon with like that's no work. They could pop your head in 2 seconds.
Yeah,
I guess that
snap
makes
your
sense.
Body in half. Yeah.
Wow.
According to Born Free USA, it's been reported that more than 344 people have been injured by exotic pets in the U.S. since 1990. And 19 states have a ban on the private ownership of most exotic animals. 12 have a partial ban and 14 require pet owners to obtain a license or a permit. But North Carolina, Alabama, and Wisconsin have no statewide laws or liabilities about owning an exotic pet.
The fuck?
Nevada is in the process of passing a bill to ban dangerous wild animals as pets. If it's passed by the Senate this month, actually. But since 1975, it's been illegal to import non-human primates into the U.S. for the pet trade. But there are no federal laws prohibiting the trade in or keeping of non-human primates as pets within the states. And because there are restrictions on the importation of big cats and primates are almost exclusively bred and sold within the United States. And keeping chimps as pets is very cruel to them. It's dangerous to humans and a drain on community resources. Mm-hmm. Most primatologists and primatological organizations are strongly opposed to keeping primates as pets. People have a lot of misconceptions about chimps because of how they've been portrayed in the media. For example, when a chimp is smiling, it's viewed as friendly or happy or mischievous by humans. And that's the context we're given in the media. But a grin is actually a fear response or a sign of stress. Chimps are obviously highly intelligent, and as they grow, they need a lot of stimulation and interaction to thrive, including socialization with their own species and outlets for their natural behaviors and instincts. Without these things, they get bored, restless, irritated, and aggressive. They become mentally disturbed and self-destructive, which is basically what we saw with Travis. And they lash out by making a mess, destroying property, scratching, or biting, which would explain why Travis destroyed his room. And those kept as pets usually don't get the right diet or housing, and being removed from their mother as a baby is very traumatizing on its own.
Yeah, that's a totally good point.
All these things happen to Travis. Mm-hmm. And chimpanzees reach sexual maturity when they're 10 to 13 years old. And this comes with an instinct to establish a social order or hierarchy which is often done through aggressive behaviors. Isolation from their species leads to depression, loneliness, boredom, and neurosis, and repetitive movements like pacing, circling, rocking, spinning, and clasping themselves. And they can even start biting themselves, over-grooming, or pulling out their own hair. And because they still have natural instincts, their moods can go from happy and friendly to aggressive and violent in an instant. And the humans around them won't even know what triggered them. We used to think chimps were herbivores, but they're actually omnivores who eat the flesh of other animals. Though it's rare, they do sometimes kill other primates in the wild and occasionally eat them. And this means that those chimps that are kept as pets could kill and eat cats, dogs, or people.
A study found that 95% of pet owners say they would never give up their pet for any reason. And I'm sure a lot of you out there can agree. Our pets are our babies, right? So when chimps are kept as pets, a lot of people, you know, having good intentions when they do that, and they love their pet. So even though it does become out of control for them, or they know they shouldn't have them anymore, many people will be going way beyond the breaking point of when they should give them up.
Yeah.
Which leads to them escaping, attacking other humans, attacking other animals, and even killing their owner or killing themselves, getting into some type of trouble. Most chimps and other large exotic mammals end up being killed once they escape, even if they never show signs of aggression, because it's hard to wrangle them back. Yeah.
And local police departments are forced to deal with an issue they have no training for. Mm-hmm. And nonprofit organizations with very little resources are left to clean up the messes left behind by exotic pet ownership. And people are just irresponsible with it.
Yeah.
Sanctuaries become a dumping ground for unwanted exotic pets and don't have the resources to take them all in, especially when they can't be placed with other members of their species because they lack the proper socialization skills. Mm-hmm. Plus, another serious risk of exotic pet ownership is zoonotic diseases, which are infectious diseases transmitted between humans and other animals. And since chimps and humans are so genetically similar, diseases can be easily passed between them. Primates can transmit many viruses to humans, including yellow fever, Ebola, herpes B, SIVs, which is the primate form of HIV, viral hepatitis, and pox viruses. And most emerging infectious diseases are zoonotic. In fact, COVID-19 has been tentatively classified as a zoonotic disease.
So animals can literally create a pandemic.
Right, exactly. Yep. And in 2016, Born Free USA predicted that the next global pandemic will originate with wild animals and stress the importance of limiting contact between humans and exotic species.
That's literally exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Yep. As far as we know, that's exactly what happened. So I see the appeal for people that want to have exotic pets, especially when we're talking, you know, I'm not talking about small exotic animals that could be easily kept in a house, but we're talking large mammals that in nature would be roaming, you know, vast areas of land outside.
Yeah.
I get it. It'd be cool to be like, oh yeah, I have a coyote. I have, you know, you see people have like pet
what
raccoons.
What the fuck with the
stuff.
Coyote though?
Yeah. I mean, tons of people have wolves.
Actually,
I mean,
If you're like, if it's a sanctuary situation, like we've seen, there's some cool.
There's a big cat sanctuary here in Colorado, tons. It even has some of Joe Exotic's tigers, I think.
So it's like, if you want to get that experience, go to a sanctuary.
Right.
Where it's, you know, good for the animals and actually done properly.
Right.
It's just like the average person. You should have some type, you should have to like go to school to have an animal like this in your home.
But people who bring a tiger into a residential neighborhood with people all around them, that just... It doesn't something that should be
happening,
you know?
Right.
Especially animals that...
I just meant more like reptiles, stuff like that. Yeah. Like just making sure people educate themselves as much as they can.
Well, yeah.
Like it's just sad that like sometimes anyone can get a pet.
Right.
And it's some of the worst people.
Some of the dumbest people get their hands on it. Because I mean, even with reptiles, I mean, there's tons of reptiles that could kill you. And what happens if your cobra gets out and, you know, there's kids playing outside and you end up... Some kid ends up getting killed because your cobra escaped.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, obviously there's responsible exotic pet owners out there that know what they're doing and do a good job at being safe, but there is always that chance that something can go wrong. I mean, whenever you're dealing with a wild animal, you know,
you never know. It seems there should be a little more regulation and safety set up for that.
Yeah. It's still very open and, you know, I mean, look what happened with Joe Exotic. Look what happened with all these other private zoos, you know, they have an overwhelming
number.
Well,
all that is different than what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
you know,
but I mean, at the end of the day, it's exotic pet ownership. So,
yeah, no, but that's like, I just think that needs to completely stop.
Yeah, so I don't know. let us know what you think about this Travis the Chimp story. And, you know, what's your thoughts on exotic pet ownership? Do you think there should be more laws, more regulations? Mm-hmm. The fact that there's websites like exoticanimalsforsale.net where you can just go
order it up,
browse a bunch of very exotic cats. I mean, I'm looking at an African caracal, which is from Africa that they have, that somebody's selling.
That's so
wild. He's declawed. I'm sure that's great for him.
Oh my God, that's sad.
So, yeah. I don't know.
I just want to say, I think Sharla is a really incredible person for going through this experience. First of all, she went over there to help her friend. Yeah,
seriously. Ended up paying.
And paid the ultimate price for that. Yeah. And lost her face, lost her vision. Her whole life was so ruined by it. But she didn't let it completely ruin her life, because she went on to do all these things and she speaks publicly. Yeah. She's really made, you know, a lot of changes and inspired others and told her story. And I think more people need to hear her story, honestly.
And people probably shouldn't own chimps. I mean, no. It seems like primates like that should not be pets. I mean, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That's what I think. I don't think people should have a chimp as a pet.
I agree. What do you think, Janelle?
Definitely agree on that. Don't think you should have a chimp as a pet. I think it's kind of like selfish, to be honest, because like, all these statistics we're talking about, like the chimp could outlive you, it could kill you, it could get free. And then it's like, I don't know, I feel like a wild animal that's not domesticated should not be living in your living room. Like, right? They're supposed to be out in the open, like climbing trees, interacting with other species like themselves.
Yeah. Are you really providing them with a better life than what they'd have in the wild? I mean, it's debatable. Mm-hmm. Plus, we have this huge problem, and especially in the United States, of the shelters just being full of cats and dogs and normal domesticated pets that need homes and stuff. Right. Like, you know, mm-hmm. How about you adopt a dog or adopt a cat, you know, instead of trying to go underground to get yourself a tiger or a chimp, you know? That's just my thoughts.
So let us know your thoughts. And that is going to be it for us today.
Hopefully you enjoyed this episode of My Heart Podcast. I know it was a little bit different, but
thanks for entertaining me, because I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, I find this super fascinating. So hopefully you did too. And if you did, make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and YouTube. We'd really appreciate it. Also, leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts if you wouldn't mind. We do like to see your guys' feedback. Mm-hmm. And we do like to see your guys' comments on YouTube as well. But that is it for us. We'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, keep taking your mind.
New messages. Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.